My brother and I kind of we tried to get away with having YY in secret because we weren't allowed to have YY at home.
Yeah.
So we tried to use a bit of our pocket money from like a little shop before we got home and just like gobble up everything and then pretend like we didn't eat anything.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra.
And welcome to the sixth episode of Hamro Yatra. Today we are joined by Sumnima Setling, who you may all know from her stage name Amazumi. Born in Hong Kong, Sumnima has moved around quite a bit, including Nepal, India, London, and now currently living in Ghent, Belgium. She is one of the most versatile and progressive Nepali rap artists recognized internationally, but it hasn't always been an easy path. A queen of many names, Sumnima emphasizes on not listening to naysayers and focusing on your own progression. In this episode, Sumnima goes over how she deals with the rise and falls since she started pursuing rap and music back in 2010. She believes that hard work eventually pays off, which we can certainly witness in her journey. As always, if you enjoyed these conversations, please share with your friends and family. The screenshots you've been sharing with key insights on the episodes and tagging us at hamro.yatra on Instagram truly make my day. So thank you and keep them coming. Welcome to Hamro Yatra, Sumnima. Thank you so much for taking our time today.
Of course, it's my pleasure.
So I'd like to start with some random questions to begin with.
Okay.
And the first question is, if you had any superpower, what would that be?
Oof, okay. I think I would like to time travel. That's something that I'd like to do. I'd like to relive some moments because I think there's so many lessons that you can take from these different moments. And it would be so nice just to go back sometime. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I'll try and change anything, but I just want to relive them. And I think I never thought about that. I think that's the kind of superpower I might want to have. Or mind reading. No, I wouldn't want to read minds. I think that's a bit too much.
Too overwhelming.
Yeah, it's too overwhelming. Sometimes I think it's best to keep things a mystery, you know?
Yeah.
The novelty of it.
So speaking about tram traveling, if you could go back to any historical moment, like Nepalese historical moment, what would that be?
A Nepalese historical moment. I think that's a really hard one because I feel like I've been so disconnected from Nepal that, you know, I think this is something I really have to think about because I need to really feel a strong connection to the place and time in history. I think that's why.
Of course. Now, if you could have any cuisine for the rest of your life, what would that be?
I love these questions. Cuisine, oh my Lord. I'm sure it will be momos for sure.
Yes.
I mean, nothing beats momos. It's very unique as well.
Yeah. Now, before we get into where you are today, I thought we could go way back when you were a child, born in Kathmandu. How was your childhood like?
My childhood was, I think my entire life I've been going back and forth because it was a little bit in Hong Kong and a little bit in Nepal. I was born in Hong Kong and then I was taken to Nepal when I was maybe like 1-2 years old. Not that I remember much of it. I probably went to like this kindergarten. Hong Kong, I have more memories of as a child. And I think I start, and then I went back to Nepal when I had, you know, when it came to secondary school, primary school. I think it was from primary school. I was spending more time in Nepal where I have more memories. I used to go to this school called Montessori House.
Oh, yeah.
And I had these amazing friends and these amazing teachers. I think I had one of my best childhood memories in Montessori House just because it was like full of activities and sunshine. Yeah. It was great. I think growing up in Nepal, like, I have a lot of memories. I think for me, memories come in smells.
Yeah.
The smell of rain on, you know, mud, for example, like walking to the bus stop for your school. Yeah. And, you know, there's just an abundance of nature. And I think that's like the strongest memory I have. And also my brother and I kind of, we tried to get away with having YY in secret because we weren't allowed to have YY at home.
Yeah.
So we tried to use a bit of our pocket money from like a little shop before we got home, and just like gobble up everything and then pretend like we didn't eat anything.
But the thing with YY is, like, once you have it, anyone can smell it on you.
I know. That's why we went straight to the bathroom and get freshened up.
Yep.
And ready for dinner. Yeah, I have great memories in Nepal. I think it was mostly the friends that made the memories memorable. Most of them are from Shuvatara, like, yeah. I have to say, you know, it's been so long, like, I can't go that far back anymore.
Yeah.
Shuvatara is my most recent memory of being in Nepal. I think the one thing that stands out is all the music that we made. We first called ourselves the Pills, which didn't go down very well, because some of these they started calling us the Banana Peels. All right, that's another spin on it. And then we try to come up with something more intellectual, and we're like, Incoative Chaos. I don't even know what that means anymore.
Oh my god, I feel like I remember that name. And you guys played in Teachers Day Thira and stuff like that as well, didn't you?
We did with like very little practice, you know, whatever we knew. We were so, like, yeah. like we talked about, you know, we're so confident in ourselves. We really didn't get it. Even if we knew like two chords, we'd still play it.
Yeah.
Play like a very simple interpretation of it.
And you guys did it very confidently as well. Like, I remember watching you guys, and I think you guys might have been like the first girl band that I've seen on stage. And I was like, wow, yeah, that's so cool. Like, you know, because you don't see that normally. And you guys were just doing your own thing. And we were like, wow, like, you know, no one could have told that you had 2 days of practice or 2 hours of practice. Like, you were just doing your own thing.
We literally just go up to the drums room, the music room, and then like some of the guys like Subodh and Deependra would teach us, you know, a couple of things, like the 16 beat of the drums. Or so, yeah, we had the audacity to just go out and perform with whatever we had. Those are the fondest memories I have, I think, and all the, I don't know, I guess all the trips that we made together. Also, just our sense of fashion back then. My God, we just wanted to look like boys. We used to think that any girl who starts dressing up a bit girly was a sellout, you know? It was just such a weird mentality. That's what I remember growing up there.
Oh my God, I remember, like, that was the time when we used to watch WWE at home and stuff, right? Like, after school.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, but there was this girl who was with these two boys. I forgot her name now. But she used to wear like really baggy pants with like a tight crop. Yeah. And like, I was just obsessed. Yeah. Like, that's who I wanted to dress up as. Because she was like, she was not like girly, girly feminine, but she was also like tomboyish, but she was still feminine. Like, I was in love as like, and I used to tie those. I don't know who I thought I was, but I have the sweatpants like on my wrist, like as if like,
I was a big fan of her. It was with the Hardy Boys. That's what they were called.
Yes.
Yeah, Lita and the Hardy Boys. And her like signature moves where she, you know, backflips.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, I lived for that.
So like after Kathmandu, then you moved to Hong Kong. When was that? That was more of a permanent move as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I kind of said goodbye to everyone.
Mm.
And I think it felt, it was really like, I felt very empty. My brother felt the same. It was around 2001, I think. So it was a very long time ago. Mm. And then so, you know, we started school there, and then we had a whole other world. Again, there was always, you know, there's always a bit of music, like playing in bands and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was around that time 9/11 happened as well, you know, when we were back in Hong Kong. But yeah, I think after that, I think in 2004, I went to India again. So it was again going to another place.
Oh, right. Was that for your studies?
Yeah. I went to study TV journalism. And then I think I returned back to Hong Kong. It was a lot of back and forth, to tell you. People might get sick of hearing this, but I just kept going back and forth to places. First thing that I did was just grab some internships. Mm-hmm. And then the young mind that I had, I just wanted to try everything. So I just went from one thing to another. But it wasn't until 2010 when I came to the UK. Mm-hmm. And then I got introduced to this group of amazing people. There was, you know, Shishi and Laksha and all of them. They were staying in this university accommodation. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be introduced to them by a cousin of mine. I call him cousin, but he's not really my cousin. He's just a guy. but he's seen me grow up. I have a lot of those guys. But he happened to introduce me because I was new to the UK. And he's like, yeah, there's this group of really creative people that you probably really fit right in. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. I joined them, I think we probably stayed there for a month and, you know, creating events and videos and things like that. Mm. That's when I think I really got introduced to the art of emceeing. Mm. And because they had ciphers and things like that. So, and then, yeah, I started pursuing it because I was like, why not? You know, because I came from a background where I did have, you know, communications, and I've always wanted to express, I think, you know, through music. And finding poetry was just like one of the best things for me. So I took baby steps. I mean, one of my first rhymes probably sounded like a nursery rhyme.
But you've got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, you absolutely have to start somewhere. You know, I think in Hong Kong, I was, when it came to rap, I probably just did it in karaoke. Because mm-hmm. in Hong Kong, it's not a viable thing to do with music unless you're a classically trained musician. It's not something that anybody thinks about as, oh, you know, that's something I can do with my life or for the rest of my life. Mm. It's always seen as a hobby. So yeah, for me, it was like, because I was in a new environment, I could do anything, you know, I could try anything, and I just went straight for it. I was like, yeah, let's get into it. And then I just got more and more hooked and more absorbed into it. And it just continued to be a part of my life because I've done so many other things. This is the only consistent thing that stayed with me. So, yeah, I didn't plan for it to happen, but it did.
Yeah. When did you know that music was a constant theme in your life? And when did you decide to go for it, like, full time and really pursue it?
I think when I started to test the waters was 2010, at the end of 2010. And then when I went to Belgium for the first time, I kind of, the kind of scene that they have a very young hip hop scene over there and it's still growing, just like it is in Nepal.
Yeah.
And then the kinds of people that I was connecting with, it was like opening more and more doors for me to be seen, to practice more, to have access to gigs. You know, it started with like a lot of free gigs in the beginning because, you know, you haven't earned your dues yet. So you're just going to do that. So I did that for like a couple of years. And then I started to feel like, you know what, I'm just going to continue pursuing. It wasn't something that was premeditated. Like as I went along, I had other jobs in between, of course, just to have a bit of income. But then, yeah, eventually, maybe around 2014, 15, I started to just be absolutely consistent with the projects that I was doing. I used to release things under a different name called Zulu Moon. Mm. I'm just the queen of many names, I realize. I'm tiring people of my names. So yeah, and then when it really, really, like, it was really solidified for me in 2017, because I just, what happened was I had entered this contest. So it's called the Nieuwe Lichting in Belgium. And it was like a nationwide contest, and I happened to be a finalist, and, you know, I just thought I'd go for it. And I just started out with a booker, and I had like a manager as well at the time. Not that I needed one at that point.
That just
point.
Sounds very cool. Like a yeah. manager.
I know, because I think what I needed was someone to give me some sense of practical direction and like, how can I move this forward? So I got the suggestion to enter it. And so the finals happened and we got to perform in one of these amazing concert venues. Mm. It's called AB. It's like AB. If you look it up, yeah. There's like a lot of great performers have performed there, and Kendrick Lamar has performed there as well. So for me, it was like, oh wow. My God, this is a good moment. So I think that started to get the ball rolling. And what happened is like, yeah,
became top eight out of like 800 competitors.
Yeah.
You?
Oh my God, you know.
Did a little bit of research.
That's nice. So, but yeah, so I think that's what got some things rolling. It got the exposure that I needed. And you know, for them it was like, oh, this exotic girl, you know, from Nepal, and she's been to Hong Kong and London and
everywhere.
It was a good story. It was a good story to sell, I guess, for them as well. And it worked. And then I started getting gigs. Mm-hmm. And the main money maker is always the concerts. I think more than merch, more than your CD sales. I realized it is the concerts that you do that bring you the income. And then it started to look, you know, I could see it on paper as well. And that's kind of what I always wanted, was to be able to make a living out of it. Not that I would never start out for the money, but eventually, like, you'd love to just do a project, promote it, go on tour, you know, that's where the money comes in, and then go back in the studio and then record again. So that kind of happened in 2017. It looked very real. I just continued to work on some projects in the background, and the last 2 years I've just been collaborating with people. So I'm looking forward to doing more projects.
You mentioned family as well. Now, like, I think in our society there's a lot of emphasis on, like, you know, the conventional fields, right?
Yeah.
Having like a stable income, a job, and then like the other pressures that come with it.
Yeah.
You going from studying media and being a journalist to then to music, where this uncharted territories, right? How supportive were your parents, or what was their reaction?
In the beginning, it really seemed to them that I was in a phase. So they thought this is a hobby. Again, you know, it's another one of her phases. She'll get out of it. Not that they didn't support it. Like, they still were like, oh, nice song. And, you know, but eventually, once they started to see the consistency, once they started to see that it's getting attention, and that I was getting these regular gigs, and once I started being a little appreciated, they started to appreciate it too a lot more. And the funniest thing was when I came to visit the UK, right? So after I've been in Belgium for a while and I had some exposure, I had like these uncles and aunties who would have never thought, like, in the, you know, before when I first started out, they were like, oh my God, what's wrong with her? Why would she leave, you know, such a good career, or like whatever she was doing to pursue music? It was like an unthinkable act.
Exactly.
And then when suddenly, like, fast forward a few years later, and then they see the progress. Mm-hmm. Then when I came back here, I still remember I went to one of these Nepalese gatherings, and, you know, they need to know what's going on. So, but it wasn't, so it was them approaching me this time, and like, oh my God, I listen, you know, I've seen your videos, and like, my son listens to your music, my daughter listens to you. You've done a great job. There was an uncle who said, you know what, I'm glad you stuck to it. And I was like, oh wow, that was like such a turnaround for me, and it was very, very encouraging. Not that I needed to have this, but you know, in our society, we're so conditioned to want that approval from your parents, from the community. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that happen, I was just like, okay, I guess hard work eventually pays off. Like, starting to see that they saw things a bit differently. I think it's because eventually when somebody has put in the work, you know, and it's paying off, like, for them, it's like, okay, you know, I guess it's possible. But I know that there is still this thing where to make it means to make it really big, to make it, you know, commercially worldwide, like your Lady Gaga or Nicki Minaj. But for me, it's not that at all. For me, I think to make it is just to be able to master your craft. And I know we'll never get to that mastery.
Yeah.
You know, but to be so like established in what you do, I think that's already something. So that's something I had to learn.
Yeah.
Because I would get quite affected as well by people constantly telling you about like, oh, you need to make it big. And I was like, you know what? I'm progressing. That's all that matters. And I just need to be able to enjoy it and not take that enjoyment away from what I do.
Mm. Now, you mentioned that you came to London, which is where you were introduced to like this whole new world of hip hop. But then you moved to Belgium. Why Belgium?
It was just like a, like I said, like it was something so unplanned. I literally went there with £20 in my pocket. I booked my ticket. And then it was out of curiosity because I was also with, so I found this person, you know, that I partnered up with in music.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of opened a lot of doors for me as well. It kind of helped me get started. He's an MC. And he lived in Belgium. So I was like, yeah, okay, let's check out where you live. And I just fell in love with the laid back vibes over there. It wasn't too competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's there just encouraging each other. And I think that's something that I enjoyed. In London, yes, it's bustling, it's booming. But I also see a lot of people hustling. That's what I saw back then.
Yeah.
You know, they're on the streets trying to sell their CDs, trying to make you listen to it. It's beautiful. But there was something about Belgium that drew me there, just kept me there. It was not the whole of Belgium, but it was this particular city called Ghent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful as well. But there is a really vibrant art scene.
Okay.
There's always good music. There's always something new coming up. And it's like a university city as well. So there's a lot of young energy over there. And to me, it was just perfect. So that was kind of, and also it was a neutral place for me. I know a lot of people in the UK, but I knew no one in Belgium. And I felt like it was like...
You could start fresh.
Yeah, yeah. And not under the scrutiny of the communities as well. So that kind of gave me the freedom to just, yeah, to try out and blossom as much as I could.
Mm. So everything happened in 2010 when you got introduced to hip hop and you started getting more into the whole music scene as well.
Yeah.
And now it's 2020 and you've rebranded yourself as Amazumi.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it probably hasn't been all rosy for you all these 10 years, right? So how do you deal with challenges and what gets you going and like what gets you inspired to keep moving forward?
I have come to accept that there's always like, it's not always like uphill. There's always these drops, you know, it could be your energy. It could be the momentum you built, what I've experienced in the past 2 years. But how I deal with it is just like, I take a bit of time for myself and try to reconnect with, you know, the first time I fell in love with the music. I have to go back to when it was, where the innocence was. And I think that's so important to remember in anything in life, I think, not just music, but it could be work, you know, and just to be able to go back to where you started, you know, where you can see everything with a fresh perspective. If I revisit that place, like it really helps me to be alive again, because sometimes, you know, you do have the dips. The rise and fall is something I've accepted. It's happened. I've gotten by with very little money as well. When you're just doing music in the beginning, it's very hard. But I think the community of artists is something that sustains you. And I think that's quite important too, because we're all in this together and that really helps. And I've been very fortunate to have good friends around me, especially in Belgium. A lot of them are artists. It's quite inspiring when your friends release like new music that's, you know, that's very unique. And then you're like, oh my God, okay, I need to get back into it.
Yeah. And I guess they also understand what you're going through. And like you've got the same lingo and you understand each other's processes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That is so important.
Now, Sumnima, what does being an artist mean to you?
Being an artist. It's putting yourself in the purest place of expression. I feel like that's where being an artist is like being able to sort of show all your vulnerability. You know, there's a lot of places that you can't go by just talking sometimes. For me, it's a very vulnerable, freeing sort of place to be when you're an artist. And I think that's the reason why I'm so drawn to it. And it has helped me get through stuff, because sometimes when I write without really thinking. And it's almost like free flowing. So you free write for a bit, you write a verse, you made a song, and then it makes sense to you like 2 years later.
Yeah.
And it helped, like, it, you don't realize, but it helps you get through the times. It's just happening, but you don't think about it until much later. Like, oh my God, that's what I was going through.
Yeah. Like, even in your music, I've felt that you've been influenced by different aspects. Like, your moods is very different to, say, Battle Royale.
Battle Royale, yeah.
Yeah, like, they're very different. But at the same time, they have this element of you in them. So what inspires you when you like write things? Is it just personal or things around you? What's the majority of inspiration coming from?
Most of it is personal, but I have realized that I have written also from other people's perspectives. People don't realize that, but I've written other people's stories, or, you know, whatever they've gone through, I see it through their eyes, because it's people people I love. And I've done that. So V for Venom was based on, you know, somebody else. And, it was because it affected me that I had to write it. Like, I was angry. And, you know, for me, it was like, there was that. I think that's when the best lyrics come out. Not that I'm saying the lyrics were the best, but, you know, for me, I feel like some of the juiciest lyrics come out of these moments where it's just like you have the urge to express and you need to write this down. Other than myself, yeah, I think what I see, what I hear, that also inspires me to write. Sometimes it's literally just being in your own mind. I explore that a lot. And I think the reason why I have so many different types of music that I create or I'm drawn to the different productions, is because they're all these different facets of me. There are very aggressive songs that you'll probably hear in the coming future as well. And there are some mellow ones. But, you know, these are all a part of me. And it's like I need to express it. But I think there's always been a duality to myself. In different contexts, I'm a very different person. I'm a bit of a chameleon as well. I don't know why. Like, I don't really like to talk about myself, but it feels strange coming out of my mouth. But yeah, I think that reflects in the way that I approach music.
I love that you don't shy away from all these aspects of yourself. Like you said, some might be aggressive, but some are mellow. And some people might be like, oh, I've got this aggressive brand. Like, you know, I've got to keep putting out aggressive content. Yeah. Like, but you're just like being true to yourself. And you're like, you know what? I'm feeling this. This needs to get out.
Absolutely.
Whereas I'm like mad and like, this needs to get out.
Yeah.
So you're just very true to your emotions and how you feel, which I think is amazing.
Oh, thank you. That's beautifully explained.
Now, one of the things, Sunima, the reason I'm doing this podcast is also to really understand people's idea of success, right? Because like you mentioned before a little bit about how our society has this construct that success needs to be XYZ. If it's not, then you're not successful. And that's ingrained in us so much since we were kids that now we're adults, and if we haven't followed that conventional path, you might feel a bit lost and you're like, shit, like, what am I doing with my life? And in saying that, I guess now that you've been working on this for quite a long time, what does success mean to you?
I think the biggest realization I've had about success is that you have to define it. I don't think anybody else can define that for you, because at the end of the day, you are living this life. You are living the life in the body and the experience and the consciousness that you are. So for me, it's like I can't give anybody a formula for success. They have to define it for themselves. For me, it was about a little bit, you know, it's a little bit of everything, I think. a bit of self-mastery. Self-mastery is very important, I think. And exploring different parts of yourself. It's just kind of like living to your fullest potential. It doesn't matter what you're doing, but as long as you realize your fullest potential, I think that's quite a feeling of success, you know? Mm. And when I haven't done that, I feel like, okay, I need to step my game up. But it's not about the competition at the end of the day. If I spend enough time on what I do, you know, I will get to a point where it becomes a part of me. It becomes like an extension of who I am. Mm. There are moments where I feel successful in certain ways, and there are moments where I feel like I need to pick myself up. And then there are moments where I'm like, I just need to be at peace with myself, with who I am, what I've done so far. I think we often don't give ourselves a pat on the back for the things that we've been through, the things that we've done. So for me, the bottom line is that success has to be defined by yourself, you know, the experiences that you've been through and the lessons that you've learned, and then come up, you know, just try and see it from your eyes.
100%. Now, what's next for Amazumi?
Okay, so the next thing I'm working on, there is a theater project that I've been involved with since.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. It kind of started like 2 years ago, where the first year we just dived into like a bit of brainstorming. And this is like a group of people in Antwerp, in Belgium, and also from Brussels. It's run by two people. They're both artists. And they started this nonprofit group called Be Human.
Okay.
So they wanted to do a show. It was like an ongoing show called Phenomenal Woman. What they wanted was to approach some women who are artists and be able to bring out our experiences, our personal experiences onto the stage. So it's very interdisciplinary. Approach. So there's music, there's dance, there's monologue, there's spoken word, all of that combined, and we're all different. So there are three different artists who are bringing their own stories. So it touches a bit on colonialism, it touches on discrimination against, you know, bisexuality, transsexuals, things like that, and also touches on sexual abuse and things like that. So it's very, very powerful. And it's a work in progress. So last year we managed to do a tryout show after doing all the workshops, and you know, it was phenomenal, if I must say. It was just such a cathartic experience for us, because we had to relive some moments that were very, very difficult. But it was amazing how we all came together. Hopefully, after this year, we'll be able to put up a premiere and then continue to give to go on a tour.
It would be amazing to see that as well. Like all the hard work, like you've been working on it for 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. Besides that, I've got two EPs that are just sitting there. I'm just trying to, you know, get some money to invest in mastering, mixing, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I have lots of collaborations as well going to come out. So there will be new stuff.
Busy,
yeah.
Now, so Nima, just to wrap things up, if there's anyone out there away from home and are struggling to find their path, what would your advice be for them?
I think I would ask them to delve really deep into their craft, to spend as much time as possible in it and learn from the greats first. And then, you know, it's okay to start out imitating, but if you continue, you start to find your own rhythm, you start to find your own sort of style per se, but that's like more on the surface. If they're struggling, the only thing that you can do is just continue what you're doing, you know, because there's like, you can take a little break, but if it's something that you absolutely want to do, I think you have to study it. You have to kind of give your all, because I'm sort of an all or nothing kind of person, you know, if you feel it deep in your gut, I think it's something that you need to just spend time on. That's like the most practical thing that I can say. And eventually the obstacles will clear, because when you start working on your craft, you start to attract opportunities eventually. You know, people will start to see you may not be the best in the beginning, but that's how we all started. And it's, you know, you can't just expect exposure straight away. Like, I've had to do so many free shows. I've had to, you know, embarrass myself quite a bit as well.
Of course.
You know, I've been through the struggles too as an artist. And I think everyone kind of goes through that. But at the end of the day, just put the work in. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm. You have to master it.
Yep. Thank you again so much for your time today, Sunuma. I really appreciate it. And just like getting to know your journey, like, you know, it's been a whole decade long journey.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Some people just see like, oh, like Amazumi, like, you know, she's like from 2017, 2018. They don't see all the struggle from like, you know, 2010 or even before that, when you're like, music has always been part of your life.
Yeah.
And like, it was just that things worked out towards the end, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm working for you now. But what I wanted to bring forward was all the challenges and your journey to where you are today. And I'm so thankful you took out some time to share that with us today.
Oh, I'm thankful too. It's really nice to share that, actually. You know, I think it can help other people sometimes when you just talk about it, because people think they're struggling on their own. They aren't.
And exactly.
Yeah. As long as you have to really surround yourself with the right people as well.
Mm, 100%.
I think if you become very successful, or like you're able to, you know, garner a lot of attention, and if you get to a place where you have a lot of exposure, you still have to have the right people to keep you down to earth, and, you know, just know what's important. I think you have to always dig deep and find what's important to you.
But what I found here in London is there's a very involved Nepalese community, which I didn't find so much back in Australia, or maybe I wasn't even looking for it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the big part of it. Like, I wasn't looking for it there, but when I came here and I started to maybe look into this podcast, I was like, wow, everyone's so involved. Everyone's so willing to help each other out.
Yeah.
And that really stood out to me as well. I was like, no one's up in there like, I'm like, oh, I've got this many followers, like, I don't need to do shit up for anyone.
Yeah.
Like, no one's like that. Like, everyone's super nice.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, like, that's amazing.
I'm so glad you saw that, because, you know, there's a lot of interconnectedness with amongst the artists here. And also there are people providing good platforms for artists to kind of showcase their work, and that really helps. I think platforms are very important, and I've seen a lot of people do that here in the UK, like Jerusha, for example, or Shreya. I've seen those girls perform, and, you know, even though we don't really know each other, like, we're somehow connected through the music, and we have so much respect for each other, and that respect is so that is so endearing. And everyone wants to collaborate, and I think that culture needs to stay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, we do.
Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates. Hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or follow on Spotify. And if you're feeling generous, leave us a 5-star review. Until next time.